We're getting acquainted with a small Italian hill town with a surprising history today on Travel with Rick Steves. The village of Calcata is home to what some would call a rather irreverent religious mystery, which just adds another flavor to the town's funky vibe. But first, we've reserved a seat at the table for you to join us as some of my friends from Belgium, England, Ireland, and Edmonds join us for a little appreciation of the beer cultures of Europe. Last time I was in the Czech Republic, my friend told me that Czech workers didn't go west for job opportunities like everybody else when the Cold War was over because they couldn't bear to leave their local beer. In Belgium, the place is filled with beer pilgrim tourists. They come there for the beloved monk-made beer. Munich hosts one of the biggest parties anywhere in the world each Oktoberfest, and it's a beer party. Guinness and Carlsberg are the dominant patrons of the arts in Ireland and Denmark, putting beer money to good use. Hey, beer is part of the culture in Europe, and we're going to explore it right now with four experts in beer. Ferdinando Mengi joins us from Belgium, Roy Nichols from England, Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland, and Dave Herline's been enjoying beer as a tour guide all over Europe from the United States. Ferdinando Mengi from Belgium.
Hey, Rick.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Tell me your favorite Belgian beer and why.
It's a tricky question because you know that Belgium has over 500 or 600 different kinds of beer. My personal beer, maybe I'm kind of more of a wimpy kind of a beer drinker, but I like the Kriek.
That's a cherry beer, isn't it?
It's a cherry beer. It's a brewery that's not too far from where I live and called Kasteel Beer, Castle Beer.
Okay.
And they brew some fantastic Kriek. It's not the famous Kriek that you know from Belgium, but this is a local Kriek, and I like it.
A connoisseur of beer can actually prefer a cherry beer. Wouldn't some people say, oh, come on.
No. Because if you have only four kinds of beer in a country, I would understand that you pick one and then be critical about it. But we have over 500, 600, and you can pick your own beer that you like, any beer.
Ferdinando Mengi, representing the beer culture of Belgium. Roy Nichols from England, tell me about your favorite example of the beer that England produces.
Well, England produces a vast majority of different beers, hundreds of different breweries producing lots of different varieties of different strengths and different colors and different tastes. But my favorite probably of all of them is a local beer. There's a brewery called the Piddle Brewery, named after the valley where it's situated. And it does a lovely, nice, hoppy beer, which is very, very nice to drink at any time of the
Piddle.
Day.
Piddle beer.
Piddle Brewery. And of course, everybody knows what Piddle means.
So you like it for the name or for the beer?
For a bit of both. I've actually got a T-shirt that says, I love Piddle.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about the microbrews of England momentarily. Dave Herline, you've traveled all over Europe.
I have.
And I know that when appropriate, you enjoy a good beer. What's your favorite beer experience anywhere?
Even though I'm a big fan of German beers, I would have to say Belgium. I got to defer to Ferdy, and I've often been there with a bunch of Belgian friends. Every round, they order me their favorite beer, so I'm trying all these different kinds, and as Ferdy will attest, in Belgium, every beer has a different shaped glass and different flavor, and then I look around and I realize that the Belgians I'm with, they're all ordering the same beer each time for themselves, and it's just me being like a guinea pig sampling all these crazy beers. But those are some pretty memorable days there in those Belgian pubs.
And of all the beers in Belgium that you've had, is there any one that you wanted to remember the name of?
You know, Belgium has a lot of these beers with these quasi-biblical names like Adam and Eve and Forbidden Fruit and all that. And Duvel is one I remember quite a bit, which I think means devil, which is pretty darn strong. A couple of those and you're on your way.
Is that a monastic brew?
You know, I don't think that Duvel is, but you're right that Belgium has many beers brewed by monks.
All right. Stephen McPhillamy coming to us from Ireland. Tell me about your favorite beer from Ireland.
Well, Rick, I come from the country that probably is best identified by a beer. Ireland, of course, being synonymous with Guinness. I think they did some research recently that nobody could identify our flag in the survey of international people. No one recognized the shamrock. No one recognized the harp. Well, maybe 10%. But everyone, 80%, recognized Ireland through the pint of Guinness. So it's very symbolic, part of our island and our nation. And I don't want to sound too cliched, but I would be loyal to the old Uncle Arthur's brew.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about beer in Europe and beer culture in Europe. When you travel around, there's a certain regional pride. I know when you go to Ireland, if you're in the south, you'd probably go with Murphy's, wouldn't you?
Aye. Well, Guinness is still the national brand, you know, but if you went down south to a place called Cork, where young students walk around wearing these big red T-shirts saying People's Republic of Cork, they're all drinking Murphy's religiously. Never Guinness. And it's more, I think, an anti-Dublin thing as much as, to be quite honest with you, Murphy's looks like Guinness. It costs the same as Guinness, and it tastes like Guinness.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I need to be careful when I say it tastes like Guinness, because I'll be lynched the next time I'm in Cork.
Well, I'm surprised you say that. Because
but I don't find it all that hugely different. And that's the problem with Irish beer, is that we have one of the world's most famous beers, maybe the most famous, but all these other countries have got beer that, let's be quite frank, just tastes better, in my opinion.
Are you saying that? Is that right? I can't believe I just heard that.
I mean, Guinness is I love Guinness, because for me it feels like it's a patriotic thing to drink my beer. And the corporation that owns Guinness must love hearing me say that, because they know they have me by the you-know-what.
Yeah.
I'm drinking that brand for patriotic reasons. But when I was a wee boy growing up, like whenever I had a fever, my grandfather would often give me a little tipple of a bottle of Guinness just to calm me down.
Guinness makes you strong. I think I've seen
that. It's supposed to be full of iron. Apparently they used to give it to pregnant women in Dublin.
All right. Give it to pregnant women.
Oh, so women who just had given birth, sorry, in the maternity unit. In the maternity unit, I've just had.
I see. To get them strong again. Now, Dave, you're married to a Dane.
I am.
And in Denmark, there's two sort of the Pepsi and the Coke of beers would be Tuborg and Carlsberg, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Is there a sort of a loyalty on that, or do people come down on one side or the other?
There is, yes. Yeah. Some people prefer the Carlsberg, especially the people like the Elephant, the stronger version of Carlsberg. Other people prefer the Tuborg green beer, but I think now it's a case, and it's really a trend worldwide, that breweries buy out other breweries. So I think now Tuborg is owned by Carlsberg.
This is a frustration for me all over the place, is that big companies are buying all the little companies up and disguising the fact that they have bought them out. All over Britain, I know there's pubs that work very hard to seem like they're one-offs when in actuality they're part of chains, right?
That's true. And certainly this process started after the Second World War and continued through the 60s and 70s, where all the small breweries were disappearing, being replaced by the large companies. But since the 1970s, there's been a complete turnaround when there's been a return to local ales, local beers. And in fact, there's an organization called CAMRA, which is the Campaign for Real Ale. Small microbreweries, as they would be called in the States, are on the increase even in this economic climate.
And when I travel around England, I think that's just a good travel tip. When you're in a little town at the pub, ask what's brewed locally.
And because it makes all the difference.
What's the beer in Store in the Wold? There's a beer brewed just outside of town.
Of course, yes. Hook Norton.
I love that beer. I wouldn't have known it. You wouldn't stumble into it in York or Durham or London.
Well, it's brewed in one of the local villages close to Store in the Wold. It's only sent out to sort of half a dozen pubs in the area or something like that.
I'm impressed by how, of course, Europe is really into its wine, but it also appreciates fine beer. They can even rise above their national loyalties, as Stephen McPhillamy just said from Ireland here. He knows there's better beers elsewhere, and he will not suffer too much to miss that. I was in Paris. You go to a fine wine shop in Paris, they don't have French beer, but they'll have Belgian beer, because apparently the French recognize that Belgian beer is better than the French beer. Ferdy Menge from Belgium?
Well, it's like Stephen said, I mean, people recognize a quality beer, and Belgium has so many quality beers, and that's perfectly right in France.
And they'll export it to Paris, and in Paris, they'll go for a fine Belgian beer on occasion.
Of course. I mean, and the French know that. And of course, the French have their wines, and we have our beers.
Well, would a French order a Spanish or a Portuguese or an Italian beer, or would that just be considered not as good a beer? It's inferior.
That's, yeah.
Come on, be frank. Isn't that bad beer compared to the beer countries?
Well, I'm half Italian from origin, and I think that a beer Peroni gives me a headache for 3 days.
I know. You go to Rome and you find these people drinking Peroni, and you kind of go, what's with that? You could get a good Pilsner Urquell or a good Löwenbräu
But they don't drink sometimes those Italian beers.
And in Ireland now as well, you see, we have just the same problem where Guinness own practically everything. We have a lovely ruby red ale down in a city called Kilkenny called Smithwick's. Smithwicks, which all tourists Ireland pronounce Smithwicks. But Guinness have owned that. They own Kilkenny. They own the Harp Lager. It's a big corporation buying everything. And I love when I go to Europe and go to Belgium or France or somewhere and travel. Each region's got the different beer. In Ireland, everywhere except for Cork has pretty much got Guinness, just bombarded with the stuff. The other problem in Ireland with Guinness is that a lot of young Irish people are no longer drinking it. I think Budweiser is the biggest selling beer in Ireland now.
I've got a theory about that, because as everything revs up with this global economy and so on, and Europe is starting to work as hard as Americans as far as vacation time and everything, a heavy stout is just a little bit behind the times, and you can get a lighter lager, and it would be more in keeping with the lifestyles.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, because all right, Budweiser's got amazing advertising spend, but then so does Guinness.
Right.
But young people in Ireland aren't drinking the Guinness because it's seen as too heavy, maybe a wee bit old-fashioned, and it takes 3 minutes to pour, to be ready. Now, I love that waiting 3 minutes. I've got no problem waiting for the black to turn into white, but not all young Irish people have that patience.
Now, hasn't Guinness been sort of struggling because they had a Guinness Ice and they had a Guinness Lager?
Yeah, they came up with a cold flow to try and make it more appealable, and they had a one called Bio, B-E-O, which was a white Guinness that they tried to make appealing to women to drink, because in Ireland...
A women's Guinness.
Well, you know, I might get hung for saying this, but I've rarely seen an Irish woman ever drink a pint of Guinness. When you go to Ireland, you're going to see tens of thousands of women drinking Guinness, and I would bet my house and my car on it that they're a tourist.
Is that right? Now, my understanding...
Maybe not my car, but my house.
We're giving you a chance to take a break from the cares of the world right now and to join us for A Round with the Lads in an archived Travel with Rick Steves interview. I think you'll agree with me that it's aged rather nicely. Our pub mates are Ferdinando Mengi from Belgium, Roy Nichols from England, Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland, and Dave Herline, who oversees all the maps we produce here at Rick Steves Europe, and has put in his time researching the finer points of Europe with us.
The people drink water from the rock. Alleluia.
All across Europe, I'm impressed by how there's a connection with the monastic culture and beer. When we think about the best beers in Germany, Andex. Mm-hmm. Dave, talk a little bit about the association with the church and beer in Germany and Austria.
Well, I think the monk culture has to do with, back in medieval times, the monks, let's face it, their life wasn't all that exciting, so beer gave them a little bit of fun. Also, they had to fast for long periods, but they were allowed to drink liquids. And so beer, you know, referred to sometimes as liquid bread, provided them a lot of nourishment. The ingredients were cheap and available. When the monks wanted to sell their beers, they didn't have to pay taxes, and so it was a nice source of income for them as well.
And there was opportunity for people to go down to the monastic community, rather, and then the monks would sell that to people that came.
Exactly.
People then started sort of associating that monastery with a great beer.
You mentioned Andex. South of Munich, as you know, is a wonderful place you can go and sit outside in the beer garden next to the monastery and be served by monks and enjoy this wonderful beer in the sunshine.
Now, Roy, in England, what's the association with the church and beer?
Well, really, you don't have the same continuity because, of course, with the dissolution of the monasteries in the 16th century, you lost that connection.
So in the 1500s, Henry VIII.
1530s, all the monasteries in England were closed down, and so they produced not only beer in Britain, but also wine, of course.
Oh,
and
so
all
that
went
that
as well.
Culture.
Completely, yes. And it wasn't really until later on that you start getting...
Also, Henry VIII could get a divorce.
Just so he could get a divorce.
Incredible. 877-333-RICK's our phone number as we continue our appreciation of that good beer in Europe. Thanks for being our designated driver today on Travel with Rick Steves.